Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Hearing Florio writing any articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Mike Florio's on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He of NBC Sports and ProFootballTalk.com. The reverberations of an odd but exciting, compelling championship Sunday continue to be felt. We initially saw the Washington Post report that the NFL's competition committee might be taking up the possibility of making more things reviewable, including a pass interference. And then the posturing began with the Benson family and elected officials talking about making the change. What is really going to happen or not happen, Mike?
Well, at this point, it looks like nothing's going to happen if the league has its way. And the life cycle began with Sunday night, the league hiding under the bed, Monday leaking to select reporters the changes that could be made. And by Tuesday, people on the record, like Stephen Jones, a member of the competition committee, saying, yeah, that won't work. And now step four, act like it never happened and just move forward. Now, I don't know that that's the final say, because I strongly believe that Sean Payton, who's a member of the competition committee, will keep pushing this and pushing this. And I think the challenge is to think about where technology is, think about where technology is going, thinking about the simple things that can be done to avoid situations like this. And something I've advocated for 4 years, and I intend to keep pushing it hard, and the NFL probably intends to keep ignoring it, but just adding to the crew, each officiating crew, one member who is a video official, who is in a booth with all of the available angles, who has a pipeline to the referee. And it can be one of these guys that's on TV now, right? Pay enough money and you can get Terry McCauley, Gene Steratore, you know, an elder statesman type of a referee who will have weight and influence on the referee on the field, saying, throw a flag or pick up that flag or move the ball a yard. As part of the first look, right, an eighth member of the crew who has the unique vantage point, as far as the officials are concerned, of seeing what the rest of us see. That's the gap the NFL has to bridge. What the seven people who are in that pit with no padding, trying to stay alive, trying to spot things with the naked eye, and one person on that crew who sees what we see, who can connect what they're seeing on the field with what we're seeing and eliminate these mistakes before they become mistakes. And if we'd have had that on Sunday, there would have been pass interference called on Nicole Roby Coleman. There would have been a face mask called on the guy that grabbed Jared Goff by the face mask. There would have been no roughing the passer on Chris Jones when he swung his hand at Tom Brady's head but didn't actually hit it. These are the things that can be rectified in real time. That's the kind of thinking the league needs to embrace. But there's an arrogance, there's a fear of unintended consequences, and there's just a status quo mentality that causes these people to just sit back and say, hey, what are they going to do? Stop watching football? We're printing money. We're going to keep printing money. Why fix it if it's not broken enough to, you know, stop us from making billions of dollars every year?
Shocked that those three things are pervasive in the NFL, Mike. Absolutely floored. So are you saying in your changes, the proposal here for a video ref, because the thing I've been trying to do is decide whether or not the competition committee wants to make everything reviewable or everything challengeable. Would this third-party ref, this video ref, would he be throwing a live flag? Or would this then be each play watched a second time, then flagged?
Not even a second time. Watching it in real time, okay. Watching the angles, and seeing the instant review and not making it a replay review or a challenge. Just, no different than the meetings that we see on the field when a couple of the officials will get together and decide whether or not the catch was good or whether it was a touchdown or whether it was a fumble or whatever. This is a caucus of someone who sees what we see and the referee saying, look, hey, 23 wiped out 11 and your guy who was looking right at it didn't see it, throw a flag. And you know what? With the naked eye at full speed, like when I was watching that play, at first I thought, yeah, that's too close to throw a flag. And then you watch it again. It's like, oh, my God, he just deliberately wiped the guy out before the ball got there. And sometimes you need the benefit of that second look, because at full speed, in real time, especially if you're down there among the gladiators trying to not get trampled above all else, you may miss it. So it would be something in between real-time on-field officiating and the replay review process, where you have someone who sees what we see and can change things and command the referee to change things, so that there is a smoothing out of that gap between what the officials see on the field and what we see at home.
Mike, before we get to some other team specifics and Super Bowl type stuff, did you see the Outside the Lines report by the Pulitzer Prize winners regarding the insurance crisis in football?
I did.
And it was, to me, I found it remarkably thoroughly reported. And I'm just wondering when those storm clouds gather further and what happens.
I wrote a response to it, and I've got some strong feelings about the guys who would be the Woodward and Bernsteins who bring down professional football, because I think that influences a lot of what they write and how they write it, and they want to be the ones who can eventually hold up the head of the NFL and say we brought it down. So I think that bias creeps into their reporting. Mm-hmm. Look, the NFL, if it can't get insurance, the NFL will fund itself. You only have to have insurance if you don't have money to pay, and if you're going to be wiped out by an adverse result. And if NFL players are going to sue the NFL at this point for not telling them about concussions, not protecting them from concussions, whatever, first of all, those cases aren't going to go very far because everybody knows the risks at this point. Everybody assumes the risks. But secondly, the NFL has the money where it can have its own fund for self-insurance purposes if there is litigation. Same thing with college football. If there's no insurance available, you pay, each institution pays into a giant fund that pays the litigation costs if and when there's litigation. That's how you handle it. So instead of paying an insurance company, you pay into this in-house fund. High school would be a different issue. Pop Warner, yeah, that may have to go away if there's no insurance available. But a lot of people think that full contact football for kids under the age of 14 should go away anyway. So it's not as dire as I think the Woodward and Bernsteins would want us to think, and everything they, and we can go back and talk about League of Denial and some of the flaws there. I think there's an effort to be responsible for the demise of football, and I think it does color their work. So with that, and we, you know, I mean, I understand that may be debatable, but I believe that based upon some of their past work. So I was skeptical of what they wrote, and I had a response that laid out some of the things we just discussed.
The Cowboys dismissed their offensive coordinator, Scott Linehan. Cole Beasley is saying the front office pushes who they want to get the ball to. It's really, it's everything we thought the Cowboys were in the first place. Like, it's not news, but it is fascinating that an active signed player is saying this.
Yeah, and he's going to be a free agent soon, and he holds out hope of returning to the Cowboys. I don't think you return to the Cowboys if you are on the record blowing the whistle on what we have believed for years goes on. I remember Terrell Owens came out 10 years ago and said that Tony Romo and Jason Witten get together and they figure out how to get more footballs to Jason Witten. And, you know, we've had the allegations made about, you know, the not throwing to open receivers and Jerry Jones meddles too much. And, yeah, it's pretty much proving everything that we've believed. And I'm surprised Cole Beasley did it. And, of course, at some point Cole Beasley will say it's the media's fault that we made a big deal out of his own words. And God forbid we noticed what he said and repeated it.
Yeah, I find for a guy who's going to be out of contract is what I found interesting. I don't know how that helps him professionally.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't help him stay in Dallas, and it's the kind of thing that could hurt him when he signs with a new team, because the new team is going to be like, wait a minute, you're going to pull this stuff with us? But, you know, maybe it's his way to get to New England, because that's the only place where, you know, they put those guys under a spell the moment they walk through the door, and they abandon all social media accounts, and they never say anything that they shouldn't say, and if they ever do, they're thrown out the door as quickly as they came in.
How are you measuring the confidence that's kind of burgeoned around Jared Goff again with the second half he had against the Saints? I know there's, for me, it's somewhat difficult to separate Sean McVay from Goff. Maybe it's not that necessary to do. I just wonder what the reputation you're getting from around the league happens to be on the quarterback specifically, if you try and remove him from the guys in his head up until the 15-second mark.
I still think there's skepticism about that, because there is a perception that Sean McVay is controlling Jared Goff the way that a kid controls the players in a Madden game. And there was that period of time on Sunday where the controller was disconnected because Goff wasn't hearing McVay the way McVay wanted Goff to hear him. But, you know, Goff was getting a little bit upset about the questions about his late season dip, and he tried to brush it off as two or three bad games. I went back and looked at his full season performance, and the bad games stand out. You can just look at the stat lines. He had four bad games out of 16, which is 25% of your season. I mean, most elite quarterbacks don't have four bad games out of 16. He had four, and hey, he had a good performance when he needed to have one against the Saints. And you know what? One of the overlooked narratives that we're going to be kind of poking into a little bit more on PFT Live, there's an argument to be made that Father Time, we're so busy worried about Father Time catching up with Tom Brady, there's a chance Father Time has caught up with Drew Brees, and he's kind of fallen off a cliff during the 2018 season. But Jared Goff made the throws when he needed to, and we've seen that throughout the course of the year. But if he has a bad game against the Patriots and you're giving Bill Belichick 2 weeks to get ready to come up with a way to shut down that offense, and something's not right with Todd Gurley, and yeah, after what Nick Foles did to Belichick last year, I think Belichick's going to be even more determined to shut down Jared Goff and to shut down that offense, and it won't surprise me at all if he pulls it off.
Do you think something's not right with Gurley physically?
I think that, look, anytime you've had ACL surgery and your knee just spontaneously starts to swell, that's not good. And that's happened to him at least twice this year, where the knee swells without any specific trauma to the knee, and he ended up missing two regular season games. It opened the door for C.J. Anderson to have a couple of great games. And my own theory is that after Anderson had that great game against the Cowboys, look, and I looked at the transcript of Gurley's post-game media availability, it felt like it was kind of short and truncated and brief. And, you know, you read between the lines, like, this guy isn't thrilled that the 2017 Offensive Player of the Year and a guy who was on the short list of MVP candidates all of a sudden is sharing touches with C.J. Anderson. And I think maybe Gurley pushed a little too hard, pressed a little too hard, and maybe that knee was bothering him a little bit, although he's not going to admit it, the team's not going to admit it, and the Rams skewed towards C.J. Anderson. So it's going to be a storyline going into Super Bowl 53. Is he truly healthy? Do the Rams trust him in these spots? And are the Rams willing to continue to feed him even if he isn't ripping up the yardage and scoring touchdowns right out of the gates? Because Anderson has been the better performer when it comes to blocking, when it comes to running, when it comes to receiving. And it's weird to say that because Todd Gurley is regarded as one of the best running backs in the league. But whether it's gotten into his head, whether there is an issue with his knee, whatever it is, they've got 11 days to figure it out. And I would not be putting any money on Todd Gurley being named the MVP of Super Bowl 53. And as I say that, I'm thinking, oh, God, he's going to end up being the MVP of Super Bowl
54 scores. That's what's going to
happen. Yeah.
Now, the Bears have found themselves in this sort of perfect slot of being a 12-4 team with a lot of really good players. And they're done playing football for the year. And that means a slew of Pro Bowlers. What are we up to now? We have to... Eight or something?
Eight.
It's just a ridiculous number of alternates being named from the Bears because they're there and they're good enough. But when does a team kind of not want guys to risk injury? I know they enjoy the trip and it's fun for everybody involved, sometimes apparently expensive for everybody involved to fly people down there. But is good thing, bad thing, or a wash?
Oh, I think it's bad thing. There's nothing good that comes out of it, right? What comes out of it? Hey, I made it to the Pro Bowl. Well, okay, you made it as a fifth alternate. So what? I mean, I'd rather my guys from my team resting and relaxing and not taking unnecessary risks with their bodies, because that offseason goes quickly. April rolls around before you know it, and you don't want your guys rehabbing injuries. You don't want a Tyler Eifert situation. You want your guys healthy. There is no reason to go to that game and play hard. There is no reason to go to that game and risk injury. I know the NFL keeps playing that game because people keep watching it, and they'll keep playing it for as long as people keep watching it. And I guess what else are you going to watch on a lazy Sunday in late January? But I hate the Pro Bowl from the perspective of creating unnecessary risk of injury for players who are otherwise healthy enough. Think about it. We've gotten to late January. You're healthy enough to actually play in one more game. So you go play in that one more game, and you risk completely turning your offseason upside down. And if you're due to become a free agent, it's even worse because you're risking much more money than what you're going to make by playing that one more meaningless game.
Mike, appreciate it. As always, great talking with you.
Thanks, guys.
That is Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.